This is Katie Jane Seaton with Farmhouse Vineyards, and you are listening to Farming on Mars.
This week's interview is with Katie Jane Seaton, who owns Farmhouse Vineyards in Terry County. We talked about how she got into the wine industry, the grapes that they grow, and the wines that they sell as part of their own brand, as well as obstacles and best parts of growing grapes on the South Plains. I also want to mention that this has been one of the vibiest interviews that I've done. Whenever I got in there, she made coffee, she had Don Williams playing on the record player, and we just had a really good time talking to each other. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's episode.
I'm Katie Jane Seaton. I am one of what we call the Farmhouse Four, and we farm row crops and vineyards and have added livestock this year. We're known affectionately, I guess you could say, on the internet as Farmhouse Vineyards.
And could you talk a little bit more about Farmhouse Vineyards and where y'all are located?
Sure. So we're located in Brownfield, Texas, for our vineyard and tasting room that is in the Texas High Plains AVA, and in Johnson City for our tasting room that is in the Hill Country AVA. And an AVA is the American Viticulture Appellation, so people know it when they see a bottle of wine and they see Napa, right? Mm-hmm. They know that Napa is a place, it's an AVA. For Texas, we have 8 total, and the Texas High Plains, which is known as the South Plains for row crop farming. So every time I'm talking to generational cotton farmers, they are irritated. Like, why are you calling it the High Plains? It's the South Plains. So it's the South Plains when you're talking row crops, the High Plains when you're talking grapes. And then the Hill Country is the AVA that has all of the tourism, so much like Napa in California, as far as the live water and shade trees and live music and fancy foods. We grow it, they sell it.
How did you get into the wine industry?
So 20, I feel like a dinosaur, 2021 marks my 20th year of marketing regional wine. I started in college. I went back to college a second time as an older person, if you will, I guess, in my 20s. And I had a professor. I always thought for sure that I would work for the Quarter Horse Association or, you know, an association of agriculture for sure. My family, they are row crop farmers. They are actually sharecroppers that came from Kansas originally. Bought a berry farm out of the Agriculture Times for $3,000. Packed up their 12 kids and headed out to Oregon, and when they got there, it obviously was not as advertised. So my grandma, both of them, she went to work in the cannery, which is like right behind the little house that came with the farm, because you have 12 kids and you can't go back, right, when you've saved all your money in a jar. And but all of those Bothams are rodeo cowboys and ranchers. And then I married into, which is a whole separate story, we'll get there in a little bit, I eloped with a grape grower from Brownfield, Meadow, and collectively with he and his sister, Tracy and Anthony Ferguson, and Anthony's family is generational cotton farmers as well, from the Maple area, Maple Three-Way. He was the last graduating class to go through school.
Where's Maple?
Known as Three-Way. Maple is outside of Morton, in between like Morton and New Mexico line, okay. Dora. Okay. It's a gin. There's a gin out there at Maple. Yeah, and a really great small school community. Collectively, so they've been farming together. Nicholas has been farming since he was 9. Anthony as well, like in high school, all of that. But both he and Tracy went to Texas Tech University and got their degrees. Anthony's master's in finance. Tracy has her master's in education. Nicholas will tell you, he went to school for 30 minutes at South Plains before he realized he just wanted to be back.
Right.
Putting land together. Land is his obsession. I, like I said, went back to college for the second time, took a gig at a wine festival, and ended up realizing that the association needed help. They had a job. I was hired. And I just didn't ever picture myself in wine. That was never the case. Wine is the sexy end product that people know and they associate with luxury and many other connotations than really what it is. It is agriculture's farm, just like everything else, right? Comes up from the dirt. And so through that job, I just never got out. Lord knows I tried. several times, but just never got out. Yeah.
What made you want to get out initially?
Everything I think comes, I'm a lot like a chicken. Everything I think comes right across my face and out my mouth pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And wine, it can be at times very political. And I was raised with cowboys. Like the family I spoke of earlier, I have all these, you know, nine uncles. They all had girls. So that tells you how much they sinned when they were younger. They paying for their raisin. But we were just raised to be really call a spade a spade. You know, just we have no time for BS. Like we got to keep writing. So stop and figure it out. And there's just a lot of politics in wine. And people don't know what to do with a woman who will, you know, stop and ask, what's the problem? What are we doing here? What's the aim? What's the goal? Mm-hmm. And then, or be really comfortable if people are standing around pointing out the things that need done, right?
Yeah.
She's deemed as bossy versus she just wants to get stuff done. So
at that time, what did you see that you thought should be called out or that you didn't really like about the wine industry?
I would think it can be very clicky. Yeah. And it can be very, I don't want anyone to ever feel diminished for what they like to drink.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
You see a lot of people work up the courage to finally go to a tasting room or, you know, they have friends that drink wine and they know it's fun. They see the pictures, right? They see the pictures of people enjoying themselves like crazy. And so they'll go and they'll find something that they like and they'll tell someone else or they'll be in a wine environment and say, well, I really enjoy drinking this. And immediately they're kind of put down for, well, that is maybe not the finest, maybe doesn't cost as much, is not grown in the right place. People have such opinions, right, about wine. And so I want it to be, and it is in many places, not every producer is like that, but wine is a shared experience at a table. It is so communal. It is a live product. It's living and breathing. It will still fail you in the bottle, no matter how well you farm it. She has her own mind, right? The vines are each her own woman in the vineyard. You have to approach them for that. And then the wine itself, as it evolves, it just takes on its own life, and you need to respect that. But it needs to always be used as a tool for not celebration and indulgence, but more community at the table. It's a table food.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to see it used as conversation and education.
I like that.
Well, I'm glad.
Can you talk about the different wines that y'all have?
So we grow 19 varietals. First and foremost, we're growers. We grow fruit for the top 20 wineries in Texas. We're very proud of our coveted client list. We work hard for it. And of that, you might, if you're new to wine, only recognize a couple of the ones that I'm going to name off. At the original estate vineyard planted in 2010, it starts with Roussanne and Tempranillo and Viognier, Orange Muscat, Muscat Canelli, and Malvasia Bianca. When people think of wine, they think Cab Merlot Chardonnay, because that's what sells in a restaurant, because people can pronounce it,
right?
But we do this amazing thing called the Texas Two-Sip, play on words for the two-sip, with our Department of Agriculture. And if you blind taste people, if you give them the option of Cab Merlot and Chardonnay, and then place alongside of it like a beautiful Roussanne blend or a Trebbiano or a Viognier, and then in lieu of the Cab, a Merlot or a Merlot blend, Merlot, you know, Cab Syrah, as then, well, as a dessert wine that is, people think of Orange Muscat and they think of thick, heavy, sweet syrup, mm-hmm. right? But really, it's just about residual sugar and how you choose to make that wine. Some of the most beautiful Rieslings in the world, you know, aren't sweet at all. If you do a blind tasting, 9 times out of 10, everyone will choose these unknown varieties because their palate and their olfactory system is geared for the cuisine that they eat every day. So mm-hmm. here in Texas, it's typically one of two things. It's sticky sweet barbecue or sweet tea or spicy Mexican food or spicy Thai food. And those wines complement that food.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we will pull the sack off, they will be like, well, I've never heard of that. You know, their body knows, their head just has to get out of the way.
Yeah.
So We grow hot weather varietals that do well in this soil and with our sun and with our crazy weather. Mm-hmm. For example, today, right? We're going to have a 50, oh, yeah, by the end of this week, we're going to have a 50 degree temperature swing practically, right?
It's going to be rough.
It's going to be rough. Rough last year. We had what we call known as the Halloween Massacre in October. We had just harvested like 3 days before for some of the growers that really hung fruit late out to ripen. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like asking a woman to give birth and then 2 days later asking her to go snowshoeing for 3 miles without meds.
Yeah.
It's just hard to shut those vines down after they've just
produced. So what happened produced. Exactly?
We had a lot of fatality. We had a lot of actual whole vine death.
Oh, okay.
So you have to prune back and all the way down and hope that it will come back. Mm-hmm. If not, you're going to have to rip them up.
And y'all had to do some of that?
We fortunately were very fortunate. We did not have whole vine fatality.
Oh, good.
We're going to have to do some really deep pruning, a lot of deep cuts. But we had our crop was just very limited. They just did not bear out the fruit after that. So we were down on our yields by about 80%. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone across the board was. Mm-hmm. But our vines did not die. So, if you know, the long game, right?
Right.
As long as the ladies live, we can take a hit that year. Yeah. I mean, what is farming if you're just not taking a complete hit in some commodity every year?
Right. What's the biggest obstacle about growing grapes here?
Here? Mm-hmm. For every blessing, there's a curse, right? So you have the most amazing nutritional ground here. It's just phenomenal ground as long as it has water. But water is scarce. So we spend really intentional time deciding where we're going to direct water. And people of the media, not counting you, of course, but the large media wants to say, oh, people are getting out of cotton, getting into grapes because they take less water, which is not entirely true. Mm-hmm. They take about the same amount as water, or they take about the same amount of water. It's just that you have the option to turn it down and stress that plant where you don't with cotton, right? You just got to pour the water to it all the time. So that's kind of a misconception.
Does it affect the sugars?
Yes. Something like that? That is how you control
can
the
you
sugars.
Talk about that?
Mm-hmm. The three things that you are looking for is right off the bat is your Brix, your pH, and your TA. You want those things to be in balance. And Brix is the measurement of sugar.
Okay.
So it's just like when you measure a horse by hands, right? This horse is 15 hands high. A Brix is a measurement of grape sugar.
Okay.
And each variety you want to come in at a different, you know, what suits the flavor profile for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're also going to get protocols and requirements from your client. So your winemaker is going to say, I'm going to do this in a dry blend, or I'm going to do this as a still varietal wine, or I'm going to put it in a sweet wine or a sangria. So he or she will give you a range of where they want that Brix to come in.
Okay.
And there can be performance clauses in contracts. I personally like them. I like goals.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll hear both sides of people who, you know, think that that can be disastrous for the volatility of a market in setting a consistent price, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Are there any other main obstacles?
Just the weather.
The weather.
Just the weather. I mean, the weather, we're very fortunate up here because of the weather. We don't have the pest pressure that, let's say, some of the other ABAs do that have humidity and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Pests will always find their way into a vineyard, but you can control that by keeping your vineyard clean. I think the second largest obstacle right now is a pretty touchy subject between row crop farmers and grape growers, single grape growers, and that is just with drift. There's a lot to be said about it, and it is an incredibly heated discussion because you're drawing upon what some people consider the last tool they have left in their toolbox to even farm or make a living. And then you have the view from others who maybe are only responsible for one commodity and they can only see their longevity and their livelihood at stake. So.
Yeah. Have y'all experienced any issues?
We have. Yeah. Every vineyard on the High Plains has suffered from drift in the past few years. Yeah. It's a big issue. About 5 years ago, I am the ED for the High Plains Wine Growers Association, and we had a what we called a five-prong approach where we wanted to meet with all of the Kim and seed producers, not just Monsanto then or Bayer, and try and come to the table with a working plan, because we have to work and farm alongside each other, mm-hmm. right? I think it's a real slippery slope when whatever it is that your one commodity does need or doesn't need, you expect to for that to be more important than your neighbor next to you. We just live in such a different world nowadays. Mm-hmm. Everybody just wants to get mad and sue.
Yeah.
Or get mad and legislate behavior. And
instead of just talking to their neighbors.
Yeah, riding to the fences. Back in the day, you know, I'm from Cowboys. Back in the day, you rode to the fence and you met. And it wasn't always great. It didn't happen in the first conversation, you know. But if you haven't exhausted that avenue yet, if you haven't had multiple meetings where a resolution could not be met, then it's time to maybe take those chances or take those avenues. But I just, you know, war is failure to negotiate. And I think that every time farmers turn on each other, we just erode our industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not farmers that are constant. That's the thing. People love to have a quick stamp or a checkbox of who's responsible for something, correct? You know, is water disappearing? Must be our farmers. Is drift an issue? Gotta be this. And you can see with pop culture or people who don't have the option of education. There was a movie a few years back called Sideways, a wine movie. Wildly popular. There is a scene in that movie where the guy says, "I'm not drinking no stinking Merlot." And all of the, you know, enophiles, fans, whatever you want to call them, just suddenly Merlot was the bottom of the barrel, like didn't want it. Like it was so not cool. In one failed statement, and this was before social media. This was before someone could say something on Instagram and annihilate someone's life. But Merlot as a variety just took a tank and you couldn't sell it. And that literally takes people out of business, right? It takes them off their land. It annihilates commerce. There's an example with a very non-accredited yoga teacher who titles herself The Food, and I'm not even going to finish the second of her. I want to give her no press. But she made the statement on social media that Fig Newtons will kill your kids, right? Like, and the fig producers take a huge hit, and it's everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm quite sure they would if you only fed your children nothing but a Fig Newton diet, right? But the occasional Fig Newton is not going to kill your child, yes. So, and wine, you know, too much wine can be really bad for you. Everything in moderation. But the point of that story is we just want to swing the pendulum so far to one side or the other.
Oh, that's so true.
With blame and rapid resolution. And it's unhealthy, in my opinion, as a whole, for not only our economy and our industry, but our environment. We only do better when we know better. And we won't know better until we have civil conversation. And you can have critical thinking and critical conversation about why you believe something does or doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Right?
And you think you can have those conversations with a glass of wine?
Absolutely. With a glass is the key word, not bottles.
Right.
Glasses will open you up. Bottles will take you down. So, yeah, but I need to expand on that. There's other people than the farmers who are responsible for the environment. And it's, you know, the large municipalities that are at play too. That is your railroads. You want to see a dead vineyard? Walk 15 miles either side of a railroad track, you know? And it's not intentional, but if a train hits something on a track, it has the potential to really do harm. So they spray everything within 15 feet on either side. I mean, death is mortality, right? So you need to look at your railroads. You need to look at the guy who gets his morning orders in the shop at your county, every county. You know, spray this on this day. Are they paying attention to wind speeds? No. Do they know? Have they gone through the protocols on label? Is everybody on label? Nobody's on label. People are too busy. Prior to some efforts that we've done in the past, plus efforts that are in this year's legislation, that, you know, there's language barriers and instructions. You assume, no one should assume anything. You assume that the guy who sprayed last rinsed the tank, did he? I mean, we're just become so volatile by being human that...
I think there's a lot more stress on row crop farmers too.
Yeah.
It, with timing stuff, especially with, you know, I spray all my own stuff.
Yeah. You have 8 days to be on label, basically, in the High Plains.
You know, 20 miles an hour. Yeah. Like 6 in the morning. And like you said, with the grape growers and cotton farmers, you have different things that you need to get done and are at odds with each other sometimes.
Correct, correct. But it can be done. We have examples of healthy vineyards and healthy cotton that share a boundary, right? And it costs about $3 more an acre. But what you will find there is that the growers have spoken to one another and the grape grower is willing to pay the difference so that the chemical that's being laid down is the right one.
Okay.
And both crops are better for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not willing, again, to ride to the fence and have that conversation,
yeah,
how will you ever know?
Has it been pretty good around Brownfield?
No. One of the things that I would like to see Terry County do, because we're the largest producer by county of grapes, and this was part of our five-prong approach suggestion, is to have spray section dates. We're one of the very few, we're the largest producing county and one of the very last few that don't have spray dates in place. So certain chemicals become incredibly more volatile as the degrees creep up.
Mm-hmm.
So spraying past X date, you know, Hockley County has them in place. Other counties have them in place. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, you can't legislate people into good behavior, but if we did have better parameters, it might make them stop and think about, well, would there be a consequence?
Have you had any regrets since going into this business?
Wow. It's a loaded question, Sierra Ware. No, I've not had any regrets since going into this business. I've had some broken hearts a few times, and it has really challenged me. And I have a tendency to be a little bit jaded. But that's, I think, anybody who spends 20 years in one thing, right?
Yes,
and
I think so.
I hope to be here for 40 or 50, or if they don't run me out. But ultimately, no. I think anybody who grows something for a living or makes something with their own hands for a living and tries to support their own family and other families that work for them, is just about as close as you can get to God, because it doesn't pay and it'll work you to death.
Mm.
But bringing something all the way to fruition is, it's just the greatest, you know, when you see your crop every year. I can't fathom my husband and my brother-in-law's ability to put a seed in the ground and know it's going to come up. I can kill a cactus in my living room, which is a very controlled environment. And so I can't grow jack, right? Like, I just can't. And so for the fact that they go out there with our guys every year and lay stuff down, just knowing it's going to come up. And I watch them sit and have their planning meetings about, you know, rotation and what they're going to put here and hoping that something's going to be a cash crop. And that's optimism on a scale I can't comprehend, right? I would, I mean, but you, if you tell me, like, we're going to have a marketing challenge and it's going to begin with tying stakes around your neck and running, you know, a course where we intermittently release jaguars, but at the end you have to have a full campaign. I'm like, no problem, right? Like, that's just, I got it. I've got an idea. I've got five. And so it's just how people are geared and made.
That's a good point. I'll ask a more positive question.
Okay.
Let's see, what is the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is putting a smile on people's faces. Like I said, wine is ultimately to be enjoyed. That, and I think disarming people about what they think they know about farmers. And we get to do that with our age and our environment. When I say our age, I'm the oldest person in the bunch. So their age, right? Our attractive, my husband's, I call him the smoking hot farmer. That's his hashtag, much to his thorough embarrassment. But they're young and they're, you know, full blown, just going all the time. And for our, for this industry, I mean, farmers age out. You know, and there's not a lot of people jumping in because you can't jump in, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the boundaries are too huge expense-wise. So we are considered young. And showing how we try and diversify over and over again. And I think that people walk in and expect to have wine and have a glamorous experience and, you know, start getting snobby about charcuterie boards because they've seen them on Instagram. And by the time they leave here, almost always they've had a soil conversation about dirt or terroir, if you want to be fancy, and the challenges of growing something. And they know to come back in X amount of weeks because there's going to be pumpkins here and watermelons, and we might have baby bottle lambs running around. And it's a really nice way for people to have a connection with their food and fiber that they weren't planning on.
Right.
So that's the part I enjoy the most.
Could you talk about the different names of the wines and what all,
yeah,
like what they're called?
Our brand, yeah.
Yes, your brand.
Yeah. Sure. So our brand is funny in a way. We were growers first. Like I said, I married into this family. Nicholas's uncle was part of the second wave of grape growers on the High Plains. And so he has very high regard for him, Cliff Bingham. And he was going to plant. They had planted, and both sides of the family have long been some of the very first organic farmers up here, which, you know, that used to be a bad word, too. Now people are, from the farming side, getting used to being conventional and organic in the same county or the same AVA.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they got into the grapes. I've always been in wine marketing, but I came up for an event and he and I had a 4-hour conversation at the Mallet, which is where you and I met.
Mm-hmm.
And we agreed to get married and we eloped 42 days later. And that was kind of a shock for everyone involved around. And that was 7 years ago. So I like to say a lot of people lost money in that 5-year mark, right? There was quite a bet going on. But the plan was always just to be growers and just to provide fruit to our winery client list. But occasionally you have two things that happen. You'll have an overage in fruit that is still quality fruit that you do not want to drop on the ground because the vine is not in peril. For as far as fruit load or crop load, and the fruit is wonderful. And so you either have an overage or you have a winery that will walk a contract for various reasons. So you kind of are forced to either, at that time, Texas really did not have a bulk market, couldn't put it on the bulk market. So we decided to take something to the bottle ourselves. And it was a joke that I was anybody's housewife again, right? Like, I'm just not from the Bible Belt, and I am not geared to cook 3 meals a day, wear an apron, and I was just, I'm not, like, that is not my strength, mm-hmm. right? I wish it was. I have the utmost admiration for women, the homemakers, who do that and do it so well. I can't. Like, it's the hardest thing I've ever done, is being a housewife. I can't do it. I'm terrible at it. And so I wanted to pay homage to that. And so we made this funny little wine in a blue bottle called Housewife. And I was kind of hoping that'd be our tiny little toe into the wine business and then we'd get out and go back to growers. But it had great success. And we went from one wine to 3 to 9 to 2 tasting rooms. Just because our brand and the way that we position our brand as agriculture and family and let people have a real insight into our lives has served us well. People have enjoyed it. But after that, Tracy, my sister-in-law, who is gorgeous, she looks like Miss Texas, but From the outside, we would appear as total opposites. We actually work together really, really well. We really complement each other. She's a total blessing. First of all, who wants to inherit a sister-in-law that you found out your brother had a four-hour conversation with? Like, that's risky, right? I mean, she had so much grace with that situation. Mm-hmm. And then she, like I said, she has her master's in education. She's a dot your I's, cross your T, I mean, planner. She is a long-range planner. I am not. I am a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants, reinvent all the time. That didn't work. Okay, here's 75 more big ideas, and I just don't think twice about it. Mm-hmm. And so the two of us trying to have a business together was entertaining at first, but we've hit our groove. Like I said, we're 7 years in. We've really hit our groove. And so when that second wine came about, I was saying to her, like, what's your turn? You got to name it. And she's like, no, you're the marketing, you know. And I'm like, no, come on, you need to do this. It can't just be Katie Jane, because I'm the one that wants to talk to everybody all the time. And she said, well, honestly, I'd call it boyfriend. Wine has become my boyfriend. She's like, the guys are just gone on the tractor all the time. And so we do try really hard to tell these stories on our back labels. Our back labels are a little too wordy as far as the industry side, like wine industry side. But they tell the story. We want people to really understand when they are consuming our product, where we were in that moment when we were producing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's the God's honest truth, right? Like there was, we farm in five counties and we just don't see our husbands for days and on end. You know, it's gotten a little better. But she was like, in order to survive, you know, she didn't say it, but I wanted to feel like in order to survive being in business with you, and being in this business, I never thought would go down like this. Like, yeah, I drank a lot of wine and that was my boyfriend. So that was our second wine we ever produced. It's a beautiful, sparkling Malvasia Bianca. We were the first to bring Malvasia Bianca to the state of Texas. And it's our flagship white. And at that time, that's all we had. Everything else was contracted. So we made four wines out of the same grape, you know, to demonstrate, which farmers are notorious. That's what we do. We make something out of nothing. And I think if you had approached it solely from a wine producing side, if you'd had a sommelier on board and a consultant and all these other people, they would have said, don't do that. Nobody wants to come in and taste the same wine made four ways. How boring, right? But it's what we had. And it was a story that we could tell. And you'd be shocked how much people want to taste the wine made four ways, because it really shows the versatility of the grape. It shows the art of the winemaking, and it shows, like, this is what we've got to work with, and damn it, we're trying, you know?
I think that's such a West Texas thing, too, like, doing the best with what you have.
Yes. I mean, it's, you have to, mm-hmm. right? You just have to. So, yeah. And that kind of set the tone after that for our branding and our names. So we have housewife and boyfriend and farmer's wife and jackknife, you know, like when you're farming, how many times do you jackknife the trailer? How many times do you set out in a day where you're going to do these things on your list and then it just goes sideways and you never make it back there, but you did 75 other fires that needed put out, you know? So that's how our brand kind of originated. It's just out of sheer the moment we were in at that time.
Yeah. No, I love y'all's names.
And well, then, thank you.
Like you were talking about the back of the bottle. I like reading those stories.
Do you?
And I feel like people now want more of an experience when they buy something.
They do.
They're like, I want the story. I want the experience. Yeah. So I think that's cool.
Well, and especially Bloom. Like, I didn't even bring up Bloom, but we, and at the first cases that we made of Bloom, that very first run was like 88 cases from these vines right here that you're looking at out the window. 100% more veg. So beautiful. I'll grab a bottle before you leave, Olson. And it was our tribute to the cotton bloom. And that's because we wanted to pay homage, you know, dance with the one that brought you, right? Like, we're not just in the grapes and we're not done being row crop farmers. Like, without all of that, we couldn't do this. Mm. And so we want people to know that. Like, we're not looking for a cash crop to abandon what the generations before us did and did really well. And so we wanted to say that through the wine. And so lots of people don't know, including myself, you know, until I moved to the South. I went to school at New Mexico State, and it was the first time I ever saw cotton, paid attention to it. And then, you come out here and before that fiber bowl is this beautiful flower, right? Mm-hmm. And people don't think about it. They just don't think about it. Cotton fields in bloom. And so our Grancy, who is just the, you know, absolute matriarch of the family, she's a fine art painter. And she painted us this gorgeous pink cotton bloom, really delicate. And that was the inspiration for that wine. So the very first event that we ever had here in this tasting room was the National Cotton Growers Association came. And we were terrified, right? We didn't have near the infrastructure. We didn't have the merch. We didn't have, it doesn't look like it did now. I look back at those pictures 4 years ago and it was real thin, you know, but our ladies, that's something else that I need to talk to. We used to hire caterers. And then after that, we would leave and go to the field to check on, oh my God, we've been gone for 3 hours, you know, what's on fire. And the ladies are always having some kind of celebration. I love the Mexican culture. I always say that I may be Caucasian on the outside, but I'm Mexican in mi corazón because I just love the attitude and the camaraderie that they share and the importance that they place on family. And they're always celebrating. Like they were always, it was always somebody's birthday. It was Mother's Day. And so they would bring amazing food to the field. And we'd sit down and eat in the field and the gorditas and the enchiladas, everything is 10 times better than what we had just paid to eat. Right. And so we approached them and said, like, would you start cooking for us? And they do it, you know, through the church. We have a, now we have kitchen. We did not at that time. And so when people come here, they literally eat the food that is prepared by the hands that trim the vines as well, or hoe in our organics. And I don't know that you would find that connection in very many other places. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just so passionate.
Yeah, that's
you
awesome.
Ride for the brand, to say the least, if you're within this organization.
So you're from Oregon, mm-hmm. originally, right?
Born in Washington, raised in Oregon.
What
yes,
do you
ma'am.
Think about the culture on the South Plains, or like cotton culture? What was your first impression? What do you think about it now?
My first impression? Y'all are so polite. You're so polite. And I am so outspoken. A little bit that's been hard for me, I guess, comes down to spirituality and Christianity. There is, I didn't know that the Bible Belt was really a thing. Just mm-hmm. thought it was a thing on Footloose. I'm not kidding you when I say that. Like, so occasionally I run into just that. There's a funny story. When I first moved here, I went in to cash a check, my commission check with my name on it. And the bank manager asked if Nicholas could come. And I did not think that those things still happened in this day and age. I mean, like mortified, right? And so sometimes there's a little bit of that that still lingers, right? But all in all, you will not find greater people. Like these people are just salt of the earth. And yeah, I love the people. I joke that the amenities might be short as far as I miss trees and water and entertainment, maybe some spots. But like this yard here that we have, this incredible green space, we knew that when we wanted to create a space that would belong to the community, that was part of it. You wouldn't think grass is rare. Kind of rare, you know? The only reason we can pull it off is because we're on city water. If this was our well, do you think we'd be pouring it to the grass or pouring it to the crop? So we wanted to make a space where everyone is involved in it. Saw no nationality, no lines are drawn here. Everyone is welcome. And that, I think that's really important. And we didn't know how that was going to go over, you know? And it's gone over great. All kinds of people come in through these doors and they smile and go into their own room where they sit down and share a table. And that's been the greatest joy for me to watch. So I think you will not find finer people than the people of West Texas. Do I miss trees? Absolutely.
You don't get sunsets like these with
you
trees.
You do
though.
Not get sunsets so, like these with trees. One of my favorite things, when you take people home from here, they say, but you can't see out. And I never knew
exactly.
what that meant. Until I lived in West Texas, I did not know what that meant. Like when I was going to school in New Mexico or when I had moved to Austin or the Hill Country. And I was like, what does that even mean? And then you come here, right? You get up on the cap and you can just see forever. And now I finally understood, like, yes, I know, they need to see out. I think it's really nice that you wanted to interview us, but I wanted to say, I met you, because mm-hmm. I'm not a huge podcast person. I'm getting better about listening to podcasts. Music is so important to me. I'm passionate about music.
I listen to music most of the time.
Yes. And anyway. So, but I met your mom this mm-hmm. weekend at an event, and she started telling me about you, and I was so enamored and fascinated by the fact that you are a young woman cotton farmer farming on your own, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah. And it's not that there's not female cotton farmers. That's not it. It's not that there's not female farmers, but it's just such a laborious and expensive endeavor. Very few women are doing it on their own at this time. And so I think it's funny that you wanted to interview me, because I'd really like to feature you on some level.
No, I mean,
do you ever talk about what you do
on
your own podcast? What led you to want to do farming on Mars? Other than it is just like, yes, I am. I think it's important.
Oh, I'm not comfortable with this.
Come on. As women, we have the duty to support each other and highlight each other.
Well, I guess
I started it when I was still in college, and I just got really interested in the history of the South Plains and how cotton farming had gone, like, through the decades. And I felt like sometimes media outlets always interview the same people, mm-hmm. and I really wanted to try to branch out and get some of those that weren't interviewed that much to get them to tell me their stories. And that's been a challenge in and of itself, but
we talked about that, right? Like, you have right. to call the same guys over and over again because they're just so nervous.
Yeah, farmers hate being interviewed,
they
and
do.
I feel like that right now. I don't like being interviewed myself.
But here's the thing. They've all been, because it's my job to have been in marketing and PR my whole life, right? I guess we better share it. I guess I'll move the microphone and we'll share it. It's to their detriment. It's because they never get off their tractor. They never come out of their barn. They never ride out of their own pasture to advocate for themselves. And so agriculture is constantly in a state of peril in some way from the outside looking in, because we just go to work. People just go to work.
Right.
And they don't do the savvy brand positioning and commodity positioning and constant defense of this industry as needed. You know, there's peaks and valleys, there's small groups, there's time of crisis. I think the pandemic really sadly highlighted to people that they had no idea where their food came from.
Yes.
And everybody wanted to go, growing a garden was a novelty, whereas where you and I grow up, not that we are the same age, but everyone had a garden.
Right, we haven't
right?
been growing up.
Right, and so everything comes full circle and goes back around, but I appreciate that you want to highlight those people, because, man, you have to drag them kicking and screaming, and most of the time, they won't come.
The thing is about farmers, they think their stories are interesting. They think that other people could speak better for themselves. And I'm like, no, that's totally wrong.
Correct.
Y'all have some of the best stories I've ever heard. A few of my favorite people that I've interviewed, they absolutely did not want to do it, and they're my favorite podcast.
Right. Yeah,
just the stories that they tell, and, you know, they'll talk about their grandparents or their parents, and it's not like we can interview them now, and they're the last thread to, you know, decades past.
Right.
And it's important to get those stories
yeah.
recorded.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we're just going to lose them.
Mm-hmm. And if you lose history, you're doomed to repeat it. Yeah, oral history is super important. So being from the Northwest, we have really great relationships with our Indian tribe, right? And the Nez Perce, I'm from Joseph, Oregon. Proud to say I'm from Joseph, Oregon, and named after Chief Joseph. And it is very prominent in Native American cultures for oral history and storytelling, and to sit at the feet of your elders and share those things so that they are not lost. And I think that in our culture, we're just so cursed with busy.
Yes.
You know, we don't know to be anything but busy, that we lose that, and it's a real disservice to our children. So I think what you're doing is super admirable, and it's not gonna hurt you to spend 1 minute 27 seconds talking about who Sierra Ware is.
Well, thank you, I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay,
Do you want to end it on that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, right. Why not?
And that's it for this week. Thank y'all so much for listening, and don't forget to check back again soon for another episode about the people of the plains. Don't know.